You're listening to Feathers, a podcast of stories about God speaking and his people having just enough faith to believe him and obey. I hope these stories inspire you and encourage you to take flight in your own faith. I'm your host, Amy Bennett, and this is Season 4, Episode 1. Well, hey, friends, and welcome to Season 4 of Feathers. A little unbelievable, but really, I am just as excited to share these stories as I was 49 episodes ago. Every single time, I am so encouraged to see how God is working, and I know you are too. I love this review on iTunes by AK Club recently. They say, sometimes life can feel lonely and isolating. I feel connected to the large picture of being the church through this podcast. So encouraging and centering. So thank you so much. I really do feel the same way. So to kick off Season 4, we have Abby Perry. Abby is a writer I met through an online writers group, and I know I must have went to her site at least half a dozen times, and every single time I just felt like she should be on the podcast, even though really I didn't see on the surface that she had a story to share that would fit here. Well, I emailed her, and sure enough, she started sharing a story of obedience and faith that she's going to share today, and it centers around her youngest son, Gabriel, who has special needs. And a lot of times on this podcast, we talk about how people have to really step out in faith and begin a journey and how that goes. But in Abby's case, this is a road that she didn't necessarily pick, but she is choosing how to travel the road. She's learning to trust God through the difficult times and that she can live from a posture of peace and joy. And I think so many people are going to relate to this as you might travel a hard road that you didn't necessarily pick. So let's get to it. Well, Abby, welcome to Feathers today.
Thanks so much for having me. So glad to be here.
Yeah, I'm so excited for you to be here. I would love for you to introduce yourself and your family to the listeners.
Sure. My name's Abby Perry, and I'm a wife to Jared, who is a youth pastor. And then we have two little boys. Owen is 3.5. Gabriel's 18 months. And we live in College Station, Texas, which is where Texas A&M is. That's kind of the claim to fame. And I am kind of a mix of things. I don't know how to do I don't do well with the stay-at-home mom or not labels because I'm kind of a blend. So I'm at home with our little boys, and then I work part-time from home for a nonprofit organization that serves patients and families on the bone marrow transplant unit at Texas Children's Hospital. And then I'm a writer as well and involved with some community efforts in our town around racial reconciliation and then supporting fostered adoptive families. So we're just kind of a big intertwine over here and really love it.
Wow. Sounds like you've kind of got your hands in a lot of different things. I love the racial reconciliation. I just had Latasha Morrison
yes,
on.
Yes, it's all because of Latasha, really. I mean, I heard about the concept of her roundtables at the IF gathering where she announced it a couple of years ago. And then we started using that guide here in our town, and it's really grown. And anyway, so thankful for Latasha. She gave us the vision for sure.
Okay, so we probably should talk sometime how you got that
yes,
started.
Yes, I would love to.
What that conversation looks
absolutely.
Like.
Absolutely.
I would love to do that, but I think the worst part is getting started. Yep. I mean, that's just my guess.
100%. That was our experience. And it was really just, we just kind of had a moment of, we're just going to have to swallow the pill of awkward around all of this and go for it. And, but there are definitely some steps you can take that kind of ease that a bit and helped it get started. So yeah, I would love to talk about that.
Yeah. That's so exciting to see, and hear somebody that's actually done it and it's turned out good. So
absolutely. Yes. And especially, the three of us that wanted to get started that had watched the IF gathering together were all white. So we had that as our first thing to overcome, and which is definitely the pill of awkward that I'm talking about that we had to swallow and just go to people and say, we need your voice. And we want to submit ourselves to you as the leaders of this, our friends of color. And it's been a really beautiful thing. So would love to chat about that sometime.
Yes, let's do that.
For sure.
Yeah, so today what I want to talk about is actually one of your sons,
yes.
Gabriel, and really the faith that you have had to exercise in his life and taking care of him and mothering him and being able to do that with joy even though you are facing hard times and challenges. So I would love for you to kind of explain what all that really means and talk about that.
Sure. Yes. So we have, like I said earlier, our older son, Owen, who is 3.5. And then we found out that we were pregnant with our second son, Gabriel, in January, February of 2014. And that spring, we went to our 20-week appointment where we would find out his gender. And, you know, it was kind of, it's kind of the fun, well, supposed to be fun, big ultrasound. And really had no reason to believe that anything unusual was going on. I was semi-classified as a high-risk pregnancy just because we'd had some scares with our older son, Owen, but everything had turned out to be completely fine. But they had sent me for Gabriel. We didn't know he was Gabriel yet, but had sent me for him to a high-risk sonogram just to make sure everything was okay at that 20-week. And we found out there that he had club feet, which means that really that his feet, both of them, it's called bilateral club foot, so two club feet, that they were turned in toward each other. So it looked like his legs and feet looked like golf clubs turned in facing each other. And our ultrasound doctor was really confident that that was all that was going on. Club feet can sometimes be a sign of larger conditions like things like spina bifida, but we were confident that it wasn't that. But it was still just really a shock and really, like I said, unexpected and just disheartening. It's so hard to walk into a space where you think you're going to come out with excitement. Jared and I, my husband, were getting ready to go on our first big trip, just us, since our honeymoon several years before. And so we were saving, we had the tech write down Gabriel's gender and we put it in an envelope and we were going to find out while we were on our trip. And so that appointment really represented a lot of just fun anticipation for us. And so those are just hard moments when that's turned and you realize you're facing something that you really just had no idea you would be. And so I fought a lot of anger after that appointment. We've had just a lot of strange things in our life that have been moments like that. I had thyroid cancer when I was 22, Jared's first year of seminary. Just lots of weird little moments of what in the world, Lord? Like, why is this what we're facing? Why is something that we thought was so good and frankly normal turned into something that's not? And so thankful that the Lord had us plan that trip and had used others in our lives, in our life, even to provide the financial means for it so that we could go. And it was a really sweet trip. That's where we found out Gabriel was a boy, and it really allowed us the space, primarily me and my own heart, to just wrestle with the Lord. And that's where we chose Gabriel's name, which means the Lord is my strength, because we were so aware that we needed the Lord's strength when it came to Gabriel's life. So he was born September 26th of 2014, and just beautiful as could be, and healthy, all things considered. His feet were very obviously clubbed, but other than that, he was doing great. And so we got to go home in a normal time frame, and then 9 days later, started clubfoot treatment for him at Shriners Hospital in Houston, which I'll never forget making the phone call to set up his first appointment and hearing. I knew that Shriners was a nonprofit hospital, but I didn't really know what all that entailed. And it was interesting because I've worked for nonprofits really my whole professional career. And so I'm used to being on the giving side of the nonprofit. And with a husband in ministry, we're so used to being on the giving side. And that phone call to Shriners really represented a shift to being on the receiving side, which sounds really lovely, but is also a huge pride battle.
It's hard.
Yes. <Yeah. laughs> That I still face, and has given me a lot more, I think, perspective when it comes to how I do serve others, to not treat them as a project and to not treat them as the little people down there that I'm serving, but to see them as whole and as people that I'm alongside. And Shriners has been a really beautiful example to me in that, primarily, or well, beginning with that first phone call when, I'll never forget, the woman on the other end of the line said, okay, and because we're a nonprofit hospital, we don't pass any of our costs along to our families. And I literally said, can you repeat that? Like, can you explain to me what you mean? And she said, it doesn't matter what your financial situation is. We bill your insurance, which is actually of benefit to you because then you meet your deductible sooner, but we don't charge anything to our families. And that's I was amazing. Just blown away. Yeah. I mean, absolutely incredible. And we knew the Lord would provide, for us. We were never in fear about our finances, but we had no idea that it would just be so taken care of from the beginning and never have to be a thought. So that was really incredible. And just gave us a lot of, kind of boosted our hearts as we were, walking into what would prove to be a really hard season that, that really still continues in a lot of ways. So
can I ask, just because I don't know,
sure.
So the club fee, like what's the normal protocol for that? Like what's expected? I mean, is that something that he's expected to, because these days, you know, medicine changes all the time.
Right.
But is it surgeries? Is he expected to be able to correct that at some point?
Right.
Like what's the kind of prognosis, I guess?
Sure. So the protocol now for clubfoot is that, it's called the Ponseti method and it's really effective. And they start, so this is what we did. They start casting their legs, stretching just as much as that little foot, as much as they can, not to the point, well, they say not to the point of pain. There were times that I really questioned that, but they stretch, and cast the feet weekly or every other week, and just stretch.
Starting at what age?
9 days.
Oh, so that's the what started at nine
yes.
days. Okay.
So they start immediately. And so that it's any time between a couple days and 2 weeks. Our appointment happened to be at 9 days. And so, and then we went every week, and they would stretch just a little bit further. So just like when you're exercising and stretching and you can go like a little bit further after an eight count or whatever, that's what we were doing with him just over a longer period of time. So they stretch as much as they can. And then at 3 months, in Gabriel's case, he had surgery to, I'm sorry, there's no polite way to say this, to release both of his Achilles tendons. So they cut both Achilles tendons, cast it in that position for several weeks. And then we transitioned into braces, like plastic orthotics. And he had these little shoes that went on top of them that attached to a metal bar that went between his feet. It looked like he was on a snowboard. So, and that was designed to keep his feet turned out, kind of not all the way the opposite from how they were turned in, but sort of like a ballerina in like second position. They were turned out that way. So that, and that's kind of, was kind of to train his feet to remain outward so that they would eventually sort of default to straight ahead, if that makes sense. So they were so used to being in, now they would turn out for the purpose of eventually being just straight ahead. But as all this was happening, during all the casting appointments, after a few, our doctor, whom we adore, Dr. Stevenson, started noticing that Gabriel wasn't showing. So when she would remove his cast, she would, of course, check on his feet. And she would notice that he wasn't showing reflexes or motion in his feet or toes. So he would move his legs and his feet would move because of that, but his feet weren't moving on their own and his toes never wiggled. And if she sort of tickled the bottom of his feet, or if you stroke the bottom of a baby's foot, they have a reflex where their toes wiggle. Mm-hmm. And he never did that. So she started to wonder if there was something more going on than just club foot. And at first we honestly did not even really have the mental capacity to deal with that, like to know how to think about that. And there wasn't really a point because we weren't going to know until after he had that surgery. But once he had the surgery, because they wondered, maybe his tendons are just so tight that he can't wiggle his toes. That could be what's going on. But that was not what was going on. We learned that there was something more. And our story with Gabe really has been that we keep getting pieces of information that reveal there's something more going on, but don't tell us what that something more is. So we knew after the surgery, okay, there's clearly something more here because we've done all we can as it relates to tendons to give his feet the opportunity to move on their own, but they don't. So from there, we went into a season of neurological testing, which was really an appointment that was just really awful and painful, which showed that he had abnormal nerve responses in both his legs and his arms. we had seen that his little right thumb was kind of always clasped in his right thumb was always clasped in his palm. So we knew there was something going on in his hands, but not quite sure what it was. So then we learn he has abnormal nerve responses in his arms and legs. But again, we know that, but what does that mean? Like, what's the root cause? What can we do about it? So then we had genetic testing done, which was a blood test on Gabriel, myself, and my husband that took months and months to come back. So by this point, we are all the way caught up to almost his first birthday. So September 11th of all days of 2015, we had a doctor's appointment where we learned that he had two mutations in one of his genes. It's called AARS. That's the name of the gene. And that those mutations are closely linked with or likely to be correlated with a condition called Charcot-Marie-Tooth, which is a neurogenetic disorder. That's not exactly what Gabriel has, because kids with CMT experience issues with both motor and sensory neurons. Gabe seems to be only motor, because he can, like, he giggles if we tickle his feet, stuff like that. We know he can feel. But his motor neurons are obviously having trouble. So I'll get away from all the medical babble soon, but
no, it's interesting.
I hope so.
He can laugh. It was interesting, because I'm not familiar with this, but so you tickle him and he can
feel,
respond. Correct. So he can be tickled, but then he can't react physically. That's interesting.
Exactly. Yes, that's the perfect way to say it. It is. Yeah, it really is. And so we learned that both of those mutations come from me. I carry both of them, which is really hard and interesting and confusing, because I don't necessarily manifest any symptoms.
And nobody in your family either?
Right. There's no symptoms, exactly, that seem to be presenting. We also later learned that Owen, our other son, has both of the mutations, but he doesn't show any symptoms. But kids with CMT, the kind of the cousin condition to what Gabriel has, which doesn't have a name, which is why I'm not using one. Kids with CMT can begin to present later in life. So even adults with CMT can present later in life up to the age of 54. So I'm still well within the range of,
wow.
Right. and Gabriel is actually very much the anomaly in that he presented at birth. CMT had mm-hmm. always had a range of not presenting until people are age 6 to age 54. And then we have Gabriel, who's presenting at birth. So he really, I mean, really what he has someday could be like Gabriel's disease. He really is very
unique.
Exactly. And the doctors are very interested in his case, which is hard sometimes because it's good. It's definitely good. And we remind ourselves constantly that doctors being passionate about figuring out what's going on with kids before has been to our benefit with Gabriel's journey. But it is hard when it's your child who's now mm-hmm. the kid that's under the microscope, the kid that they want to learn more and more. Frankly, the kid that's the guinea pig. That's really what's going on here. And they're wonderful. No one is being overly, he's not overly poked and prodded for the sake of science, but we do feel that we have to be a little bit careful of that, and protective, and to really just try to walk the path of how do we care for our child, protect our child, and also recognize that we do have the opportunity to potentially benefit other children in the future. And how thankful have I been over and over again, not only in Gabe's story, but just in, hey, my kid has a cough. What medicine do we give them? I mean, that was learned by someone else having a cough in the past when there wasn't a medicine to give them. And so we just have felt really, it's opened our eyes to a lot of new ways of observing life in general, and primarily within the medical community. So it's also so ironic, because I have a writer brain, a creative brain, not a math and science brain at all. And so I've had to really just trust the Lord to give me insight and understanding in all of these spheres and all kinds of new jargon and vocabulary that I never had and frankly never would have chosen to have or need. And so, yeah. So
I think I derailed you a little bit.
Oh, no, it's
you
fine.
Were at his one birthday. I mean, one birthday, first birthday.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think. So really, right. So we get the those results. And then simultaneously, Gabriel's feet were starting to not fit in his braces well at all. His feet were, his heels were kind of retracting back and we couldn't keep his feet flat. So we had to start casting again, which is a lot harder with a one-year-old, because he was crawling around, which was awesome that he had started crawling. His physical milestones are definitely delayed. Nothing cognitively is delayed, but physically he is. And he had started crawling. We had to cast again. So that day that we got those results, it was the hardest day. We were there forever that day. I think we were in a casting room for 5 hours. Our orthopedist didn't want to share the results with us because, in her words, she didn't really know what they meant. And so she said, "I've never seen results like this before," which is a lot to take in. And so she wanted the neurologist to explain to us, which was totally appropriate, but it took a long time for the neurologist to get to us. She got to us, explained, and said, "Mom, since both of the mutations come from you, I want to do a neurological exam on you right now." So I had just taken in all that information, had not slept a lot the night before, was full of coffee and jitters. And so that's not going to look great on a neurological exam when they're asking you to like walk in a straight line with your eyes closed. And so that was just all kind of chaotic. Gabriel had been asleep on me and I had to wake him up and hand him over to Jared in order for them to do the exam. Just lots of like hard on
that's
your...
That's the worst, it was, too, waking up a child.
A baby who's like being, you know, already having a rough day and has finally gotten to take a nap. It was just everything that can be hard on your mom heart. It just was. That all happened that day. And then we get all the results and then they had to cast him, finally at the end of this 5 hour appointment. So he gets casted. We come home. He did immediately. The minute I set him on the floor, he started crawling in his casts, which was like the most joyous thing because we really weren't sure if that would happen. So he was casted, for a long time, was meant to have surgery. So we were back to those weekly or every other week casting trips. He was meant to have surgery that November, but he got sick. And so we had to delay it until January. And then he had surgery in January too. The purposes were to release those Achilles tendons again. So I don't think I said this before, in little ones, like less than 2 years old, if you cut those tendons, they are meant to regrow to the proper length, which is kind of incredible. Oh. If you did that to you or me, that would not happen. but in kids, they do. And so his, from that first surgery, had regrown, just not stretched quite enough. And so the goal this time was to give them another chance. So they cut those, and then they were also going to cut some tendons along the sides of his feet, because that was what was really super tight and causing those feet to turn back inward. And then they also wanted to get some nerve and muscle biopsies in his feet to see what was going on. So this was a longer surgery, and it's just hard. It's hard to have your baby, you know, be on drugs that are sedating him and kind of watching him head toward that sleepier state, even though you're glad that he, you know, you can't feed them before. So there's a part of you that's so happy that he's not noticing that he's hungry, but it's weird to watch your baby in a sort of drug-induced state like that, and then to just physically hand him over to someone that's going to fill him with anesthesia and then cut into him. It's a lot. And so we had family with us that was so wonderful, sitting with us at the hospital, and then a nurse would call me every once in a while from the operating room to sort of update me, which was also really just kind of them. And he came out of the surgery sooner than was expected, which is one of those things that you don't know how to feel about. Like, everyone's initial reaction was sort of to be excited about that. But I'm definitely a realist. Some people say pessimist. And just have had a lot of occurrences with Gabe where the first information, making positive assumptions about the first bits of information, has not always worked out in our favor. And so I was a little more cautious with that. And it turned out that while severing the tendons and all that had gone really well, part of why the surgery ended quickly was that the muscles and nerves simply did not exist in order for them to biopsy.
wow.
Yeah. So there was just sort of like, this is a really unpleasant way to say it, but kind of just junk tissue in his feet that wasn't really anything, which tells us that when the DNA and when he was created, when those impulses were being sent to his feet to tell his feet what to create, I'm saying this in a very non-scientific way, the impulses just weren't delivering a complete message. So there's stuff there, but it's not the stuff that's meant to be there. It's not the stuff that's in me, in you and me. And so, so we weren't able to get those biopsies, which was disheartening. That was information that really could have told us some more, but it's, but the lack of information also tells us something. It tells us that we really are just looking at an anomaly. And Gabriel's doctor, when we were waiting to be able to go into recovery, his orthopedic surgeon, whom we've had, the one that casted him at 9 days, Dr. Stevenson, who we've had all along, I'd call her our team captain because she's just led us through everything and will for a long time. She gave a really helpful analogy. She said, it's like we're at the paint store and we're looking for the perfect shade of red, but we just can't find it. It's just not a color that has a name yet. It's like Gabriel is that shade of red that we say, well, it's kind of like fire engine red, but it's more poppy red, but we just don't quite have a name for it. There's not a name for the color, which gave me really helpful language to use, because it's so strange to be in a situation with your child that feels so nebulous and so like you can't nail it down. And it's really taught me a lot about how, as people, and I think maybe my personality is bent toward this all the more, but we really do spend our lives constantly looking for categories. We want to be able to label things, and we want to be able to say this means this, which means this. We look for patterns. We look for even just words to use to discuss things, and to not have those words has been really a challenge in so many ways. It's a challenge when we're talking to doctors. It's a challenge when we leave an appointment and we're trying to word the text message to send to our family. It's a challenge. This is a blessing. We have a large online community that really supports us, both people, lots of people that we know, but then also ones we don't, who have just been encouraged by others to pray for Gabriel. And every time I'm trying to craft a blog post or trying to craft a Facebook update, it's hard to find the words. And so to sort of have a new frame given to us, a name for the color, that we're looking for a name for the color, was really a gift to our family, that you, not the kind of gift maybe you expect a doctor to give you. But if she can't be giving me concrete information, then I'm thankful that she can give me a frame for how to share the ambiguous information. Because especially as a writer and as an articulator, that's hard. It's really hard for me not to have just concrete language to use. So I'm thankful for her guidance.
But I also have to say, as I think it's also a blessing that you are gifted with words. And if there was somebody, you know, if he had a parent that struggled even with words, how much harder it
yes,
would be.
Yes, that's very true. That's very true. Yeah. I am thankful for that. And I was just telling my mom yesterday, we've had the stomach flu in our house. My husband and Gabriel has had it. And I was supposed to get to go somewhere with friends this week and didn't end up getting to go. And my mom was saying, I'm just so sorry you didn't get to go. And I said, I really am too. I'm disappointed, but I'm also so thankful that the gift the Lord chose to give me and the passion he chose to give me is writing, because I can type a blog post on my phone while I'm rocking a sick baby. And what mm-hmm. if it was, and that's not my ideal spot for writing. I have all my, you know, dreamy fantasies about being alone for hours and hours and writing. And sometimes I do get to do that, but, most of writing happens in the cracks of the everyday. And I'm so thankful it's something that I really can do with one hand, or that I can speak into a voice memo or whatever, and that it's not something that requires, I don't happen to be inclined towards something like painting or something that would require a lot more space and both hands and not kids around and, you know, all those kinds of things. So I really, that's been a huge testament of the Lord's faithfulness to me, that that's the gift he's given me. And that because of the story he's given us with Gabriel, he's given me a passion for storytelling, and a passion for inviting other people into our story. And I would say that I am the one that's been the most blessed by being able to articulate our story. But I do think that just by his grace that others have been blessed by the way we've told our story as well. So I'm very mm-hmm. thankful for that. And there are a lot of days of motherhood where that is my primary reminder that the Lord is good to us. Because that's something I've really wrestled with. But I feel like I've literally told people, I feel like the song "You're a Good, Good Father" is just everywhere right now. And I want to love it, but I don't. Sometimes there are days where I feel like it is just pestering me. That's a nice way to put it, that it's just kind of attacking me. And I need these reminders constantly that he is a good father, and that any part of me that doesn't believe that, that he's calling those parts of me to be reoriented to him and to learn a new definition for what it means that he's good. And there are so many things that remind me of that. But writing, I would say, is top three for sure.
Mm-hmm. And so this really is an ongoing thing. It is. Just a couple months ago, you got this message about his feet. So what is sort of, where are you guys at now with the process with him?
Sure. So the way that I generally explain it is we sort of have two tracks going on. So there's the track of how do we help Gabriel achieve as much functionality as he can, given what we know. So those are that's the tangible, practical, what we can see. So he wears braces every day, like I talked about before, plastic orthotics they look like little boots. They go over his feet and reach almost all the way up to his knees. And he wears those 23 hours a day. So we basically take them off for bath time and a little break, and that's it. So he wears those every day. We have a lot of just kind of maintenance doctor's appointments, hands, feet, neurology, genetics. Those are all things we go to Houston for on a semi-regular basis. And he is at this point, so he's almost 19 months in a couple days, and he is pulling up now, which is that was a huge deal, a really big accomplishment that we're so thankful for. And just a couple weeks ago, he started walking behind like push toys, or pulling up at a bar stool and pushing that around the house, which is just huge. It's absolutely huge. Walking for him will look different because his feet don't move up and down. And so it'll depend on sort of how he chooses to do it, but he may sort of shuffle, like almost like skiing, or he may kind of march a little bit, like picking up his feet fully. We don't know. And something his doctor says to us a lot is, we'll know when he shows us. She says that about things all the time. We'll know when he shows us. We have to have the patience and sort of the cheerleading spirit to say, show us, Gabe, show us what you're going to do. And to remember and be thankful for the fact that he doesn't know that this is unusual. And certainly there are going to be hard conversations and tearful moments that we have with him when he is realizing that things are different for him. But moms of other kids with special needs are constantly telling me, so often my kid is the one saying to me, Mom, it's really okay. Like I'm really okay. And I'm an overcomer. And I mean, they don't say it that way, but that's what they're communicating. I'm really thankful, to have their guidance primarily. And I will get back to more of where we are with Gabe, but, my family growing up when I was a kid, our family's best friends, their daughter, Gracie, was born with Down syndrome and then, had leukemia as a toddler and, through a series of events ended up suffering severe brain damage. And so I grew up next door to, for a lot of my childhood, we actually lived in their house with them twice while we were building a house. I grew up with a friend with severe special needs. And so that has been a part of my story for a really long time. And I have gotten to learn from Gracie what it is not to view challenges as discouragement, but as opportunity. And I don't mean that in a Pollyanna kind of way. Like it is still really hard. It's just very hard. And there is there is something about living with visible reminders of the brokenness of this world that is disheartening at times, but is also just such an opportunity to just beg God for his redemption and to acknowledge it when we see it. And so I'm confident that he will put that spirit inside of Gabriel that he already has. From when Gabe was probably 2 months old, I have such visceral memories of him starting to cry and then like nibbling on his lip with his little gums. He didn't even have teeth yet, nibbling on his little lips to keep himself from crying. Like, he is just the kid that has wanted to be cheerful, that has wanted to be okay from the beginning, which is just huge. I mean, it's huge. Wow. It's so the Lord. Mm-hmm. And so all this to say, he's, you know, pushing around bar stools. He has physical therapy every week. And he keeps hitting the milestones that they set for him. We're so thankful for that. So our very practical prayers now are that he will be able to stand on his own, balance on his own. He's not quite there yet, but really wants to. And then obviously that he'll begin walking on his own as well. We're, you know, it can be hard not to, it's very easy for my mind to jump to things like, I hope by his second birthday, he's doing X, Y, and Z. And I think in a way that's good. I'm definitely, like on, I don't know if you're familiar with Strength Finders, but on, yeah. So yep. I'm like an achiever. I mean, mm-hmm, just out of control, which is so ironic.
Yes.
With everything that the Lord has given us to handle. But in a way it's good, because I don't ever believe that Gabe can't do something, or that I can't provide everything that that the Lord through us can't provide everything he needs in order to succeed. But there's also, I'm very rational. So there's also the side of me that says, you know, that this may or may not be a reality for him, and how do we function inside that? But, you know, there's a lot of tension, but we're learning how to find, tension to be a place where grace abounds as opposed to a place where frustration abounds. And so we'll see what the Lord has him doing by his second birthday. And regardless of what he has him doing, God is still good, and he's not bound by my timetables. And kids are so funny. They won't do something for so long, and then it's like they do five new things in spurts. And so we'll see. We don't know. We'll see. I'm so thankful that Gabriel is our second child, and that he has Owen to chase around, and he wants mm-hmm. to keep up with him so badly. And it's awesome. I mean, it's just the greatest thing. And Owen knows nothing but to be a cheerleader and a leader for Gabe. And we're so thankful for that. So that's sort of the practical, really, like what we can see with our eyes side of things. And then on the other side is just the continued pursuit of information. So we'll do some studies on my nerves to sort of see if that indicates anything to us. At this point, we won't be pursuing anything further with Owen, because we just don't feel that it's necessary, or that it would be of benefit in a way that makes the pain of the tests worth it. If mm-hmm. Owen were to start showing, you know, signs of something being wrong, then we'd be having a different conversation. But for now, we're just going to let him be a 3.5-year-old kid and ask sure. the Lord to withhold any regression from him. And so, you know, there's really not a ton that we can do at this point to learn more. But like you said, medicine is always evolving. Science is always moving forward. We did hear from our neurologist last week that there are talks of doing some studies in mice, which is just so, I mean, that's how they do it, but it's so weird when you're talking about your kid. There's talk of doing studies in mice for a certain form of genetic therapy, specifically for the gene that is affected in Gabriel. So we don't know. We certainly live in a information hungry time era of the world, which is at times a little scary, but also good. It's good that there are scientists that want to be, you know, always learning the next thing. And if their competitive spirits lead to something beneficial for Gabriel, then more power to him. And that's certainly a way that the Lord chooses to allow us to be agents of redemption in the world. So we are just seeking to find his goodness in the unknowns and seeking to find peace where there is not information. That's a hard place for me. I find a lot of comfort in information, and he's showing me that there's a lot more to be found in wisdom and in trust than in knowledge. And there's a lot to be said for that. Sometimes what I want to say for that are not words that would be podcast appropriate, but sometimes, but when his spirit is guiding, then it breeds gratitude for sure. So that's kind of where we are today.
Yeah. Well, I relate in a small way, to your story in that our son that we adopted has ADHD.
Okay.
And it's been almost 2 years since we've adopted him. We've been doing occupational therapy with him twice a day, every day.
That's a lot.
Since October of 2014. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then we have, you know, meetings with the doctor. We're trying to get his medicine right, meeting with the teachers, and they're saying, you know, this and that.
Right.
And it can be so frustrating because you don't know what to do. You don't know what will help. And I just relate to that achiever thing. It's like, you don't want to give up because you know you can get there.
Yes.
And my mom has talked about that with me before. It's like, but Amy, it's good that you have that spirit of let's keep going, you know,
Absolutely. Let's
find a resolution to this instead of just giving up and saying, oh, well, you know,
guess
whatever,
this is what it is. Right. Right.
Yeah. But how do you, and you know, I'm asking for myself and other listeners, I can imagine that there's, you know, we all have all kinds of struggles with our kids, whether it's, you know, and some people have emotional struggles,
totally.
not physical ones, but how do you, because really I think your struggle is to, how do you keep joy? How do you keep peace?
Right.
How do you keep, becoming, and I think your phrase was becoming a wholehearted woman.
Mm-hmm.
That follows after Jesus. How do you do that in the midst of such disheartening and confusion?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'd say there are several answers to it. To be completely honest, part of the answer at the beginning. So when I was the one that realized that Gabriel's little thumb was clasped in his palm several months after he was born. You know, when babies are really little, they kind of have their little fists balled up all the time. So we'd never noticed. But then when he started kind of reaching around my thumbs to try to do little, like, you know, baby sit-ups when they're sitting against your legs, I realized I kept having to wrap one of his thumbs around, and it was because he couldn't do it himself. And that moment was really, I kind of felt like I fell into a pit in that moment. My heart just sunk because I felt like we were never going to stop the domino train of bad things. It felt like we just kept spiraling from one thing to the next. And that day sent me, I may have already been going to counseling, but I definitely started going after that. And I was starting to have nightmares about terrible things happening to our other son because it felt like he was the only one untouched. Things got very dark for a while. And I ended up at my doctor saying, I don't think I can grab hold of this. I don't think I have the ability to access the wholehearted option version of myself. And I think I need some help. And I ended up on an antidepressant, and I still take it. I don't think that medicine's the answer for everything, but I think it's an answer for some things. And I realized that for me, in my situation, if I wanted to approach my life, if I wanted to approach my faith and my family wholeheartedly, it was going to take some extra help. Mm-hmm. And it was helpful to me too. This is going to sound funny, but I mentioned that I had thyroid cancer several years ago and ended up having my thyroid removed entirely. And so I take a replacement every day. And that habit was really beneficial to me when I realized that an antidepressant might be something I needed, because the same way that I don't have a thyroid anymore and so I needed a replacement, a part of my brain and heart were just broken. And I needed them to be supported on a physical, chemical level. And so that really has helped me. A friend kind of helped me see it this way. She said, I just think you need something that clears the fog enough that you have the option to choose faith. Because right now you're so low and your heart is so pressed down. I don't know that you feel that you even have the choice. And so, you know, maybe you should consider this. And I'm so thankful. Frankly, for me, it was certainly a pride issue. And I'm thankful that that the Lord gave me the humility just to embrace that option. And so since that, there have been a few other just really practical things that I think have propelled me back toward being a wholehearted person. And one of them has been refusing to believe that our situation with Gabe exempts me from serving others. And I don't mean that in a legalistic way. And I don't mean it in a way, me getting up and serving my family every single day is serving others. And I want to validate that for other people who are in situations with their family where they feel as though they can't do anything else. I validate you, and I don't want to take away from that at all. But I was starting to see that my lack of external focuses was hurting our family. I needed some other things going on in my life to energize me and to provide joy that I could then project back into our family. And so I found some ways. I didn't even really talk about this aspect of our life, but before Gabriel was born, my husband and I had become a licensed foster family. And before we knew about Gabriel's condition, our plan was to begin fostering when he was several months old, which is something that has had to shift. But I wanted to find ways to engage the foster and adoptive community in our town, and have found ways to do that through supporting other foster and adoptive families, primarily through a Facebook group online where we just coordinate things like meal calendars and raise money for a closet in our town where foster families can pick up car seats and clothes and all that kind of stuff at no cost to them. And I realized that there really were lots of things I could do online from my home, taking care of my babies, running back and forth to Houston for appointments, and just checking in on my phone every once in a while, that really were of a benefit to my community, that really were helping me serve a population that I care so deeply for and thought I would be a member of, but don't get to be right now. And that it frankly brought me such joy. And that's really valuable. And I think it's really important for moms to become comfortable with saying, I've got to find the things that fill me with joy so that I can pour joy into into my family. Moms have so much power in our families in that way, and we need to take that seriously. And I was having days where I was viewing myself as a martyr in our family, and that does not help anybody. It wasn't blessing my husband. It wasn't blessing my kids, and I needed to find ways to pour into myself, which for me happened to be doing things that oriented me to what was going on in our community. And so the racial reconciliation opportunities that I mentioned before, that was another really big thing, and writing, those were all huge. I am a pretty severe introvert, and so it can be really easy for me to withdraw pretty far. And so I've had to be careful, because everything I just mentioned is not actually face to face with another human being. And so I have really extroverted friends who have really helped me to stay connected with the people right in front of me, not just online, but with engaging with them. So I made a commitment to being at a weekly Bible study as often as I could, and just sort of set some anchors in my life that again, were not legalism. If it didn't work out, that's okay. But just having those anchors in my life to say, I am going to be at Bible study this week if at all possible, and I'm going to sit in a room with other faces, and I'm going to remember what's going on with other people. I'm going to study the Word with other people, and I'm going to trust that the Lord's faithfulness will be breathed into me and therefore my family that way. Those have all been really important things, and finding some just purely fun things have been really important too. I don't at all want to make it sound like I just spend my life pouring out. I'm up for a Netflix binge just as much as the next girl. And I love podcasts and I love reading. And so I think what I'm really trying to get at in a very long-winded way, is that taking some time to self-assess and to see how the Lord has designed me, to see how He's designed me both for input and for output, has been really important. And I don't think that's selfish. I actually think it's giving, because it's allowed me to engage my family in a much more positive way. It's reduced conflict in my marriage, because I can go to my husband and say, this is something that's really important to me. Can we help each other find a way to make this happen? And he knows it will be of benefit to both of us. His job gives him a ton of life. It certainly is a huge outpouring, but he loves it. He's an extreme extrovert. He's around people all day. Somehow being around high schoolers like gives him energy, whereas I would be like laying flat on the floor. And so God's been really kind to us in that, to just give us both insight into the ways that we are poured back into, and to help each other find those spaces. And it also gives us the insight and the perspective to want to find those things for our kids as well. And to, from an early age, be studying their personalities and seeing what the Lord has created in them to find life-giving. So those are kind of some things that have worked for us, and we're certainly still learning and finding those things along the way. And it'll certainly evolve as our kids get older and become school age and all that. But I'm thankful just to have that perspective as an individual and in our marriage as well.
Mm-hmm. So as you've gone through this time, is there any scripture that has also encouraged you and helped you to keep going?
Absolutely. There are many, but the first one that always comes to mind started to be really special to me. I think it's now been 11 years ago. I was working at a camp, and a fellow guy that was working at camp with me, he was sort of my boss that summer, and he gave me a Bible and had specifically underlined a couple of verses for me. I was really battling just a lot of fear and a lot of legalism. My heart was just really tied up in doing everything right. Kind of the weaknesses of the achiever were all sort of taking mm-hmm. over. and I was really young. I mean, I think I was, yeah, I was 17. I was really young. I was about to go to college, and he just had really identified some things I needed to be set free from, and the Lord was really using him in my life that summer. And so he gave me this Bible, and in it he had underlined Proverbs 3, 25 and 26, which say, "Do not be afraid of sudden terror or of the ruin of the wicked when it comes, for the Lord will be your confidence, and he will keep your foot from being caught." And so when Gabriel, when we found out, you know, in utero that club foot was going to be a part of his life, after I ran through all of my non-podcast appropriate thoughts, I thought of these words, and I had a friend paint them on a canvas, and it hangs in Gabriel's room now. And I think on them all the time, because if I look at Gabriel, it's so easy for me to just see, Lord, his feet are caught. Like, what are you talking about? You did not follow through. I have a child whose feet are caught, but God says that they're not. And he says that he will be my confidence, that he will be Gabriel's confidence. And that means that Gabriel is not limited by the physical, that he's not limited by the brokenness of this world, the brokenness of his own body. And so those verses have really, the phrase that I use a lot when talking about this is that, they're verses God has used to expand my categories for him, for myself, for my child, and for how our stories of redemption can be used in the world. And so those verses just really, I don't know, I might need to get them like tattooed on me or something, because yeah. My husband has gotten a tattoo through all of this from some other verses that have been really meaningful to us, but it may be my turn soon, because they've been just essential to my faith in these last couple of years.
Gosh, yeah, that about made me ugly cry.
Yeah, it's pretty. I know, constantly when people read my blog, they're like, "Oh my gosh, I was just sobbing at my desk," and I'm like, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I need to have like,
yeah,
trigger
like
warnings."
Seriously, I'm like breathing deeply over here, like swallowing the lump. Hey, no, because I just relate to that so much. Just even with my son, and that's where I've been. Just lately is you know, God didn't make a mistake with him. And, you know, we pray for healing of his mind, and but also praying that if he doesn't take it, that somehow it's used for good and for his glory.
Amen.
You know, that's, and it's not necessarily that he, that the only healing is not just that it's gone, but that God would use it.
Yes. Yes, that our, and that our way of thinking about wholeness would be mm-hmm. according to what God says is whole and not according to what the world says is whole. I had no idea how many of my definitions were so influenced by the world until this happened. And I thought, but God doesn't see this as a mistake. He doesn't see this as limiting. He doesn't see this as confining, and I need to, and that doesn't mean that it's not brokenness. It is. He didn't want this to happen. This would not have happened in a pre-fall world, but he, Gabriel, is no less capable of redemption and reconciliation and wholeness, and no less capable of being an agent of redemption and reconciliation and wholeness because of these, you know, finite limitations that he experiences. And yeah, when you said, even if not, then God is still good. That's the tattoo that my husband got when Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego say, our God will rescue us from the furnace, but if not, he is still good. That has been our like lifeline to the point that it's now permanently on my husband's arm. So
that verse has actually come up with me.
It's so
in a couple different places. But that's really my prayer. Like, Lord, I believe you can heal him. But even if not, that you are still good. You're still going to get the glory. And I love that you talked about him being an agent of redemption as well.
Yeah.
So good. Well, thank you so much for sharing all that. Just even in the midst of that, like what a blessing that you can do that in the midst of it.
Thank you. Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Yeah. So if people want to find you, follow along with the story, where can they do that?
Yes. So I blog at joywovendeep.com. And you can find me on Facebook. If you just search Abby Perry, you can find my Facebook page. And I always post my blog posts there. I think sometimes it's easier for people to just track along that way. And I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Abby, A-B-B-Y-J Perry. And I kind of, yeah, hang out, you know, in all of those spaces. So would love to connect there.
All right. Well, thanks so much again.
Thank you.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Abby. You know, even though Abby didn't choose for her son to have this condition and travel this road, she has had a choice about how to travel it. She could let the depression take over. She could really just give up on her son. She could complain and grumble and have a very bitter attitude about such hard times. But you can hear in her voice just how difficult it is at moments, and yet how she's letting God minister to her and give her hope and let it build her character. I'm just reminded once again that God does not always promise us a life of comfort and easiness. You know, God is totally sovereign, and just like we talked about, we believe God could totally heal our children instantly if he wanted, but sometimes he allows these hard roads. You know, some moments of life, he invites us to these hard places, and if we let it, good can come from it. I'm reminded of the verses in James where it says, consider it pure joy whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking in anything. So yes, I believe it's a choice when we travel these roads how we're going to respond, and I am just so encouraged by Abby and her story. So guys, I want to encourage you to hop on Facebook and share this post. Maybe you have a group or a friend that you think this would actually minister to. Also, be sure to leave iTunes reviews. That always helps. And of course, you can find show notes over at featherspodcast.com. All right, guys, we will see you next week on Feathers.